we all need to be mocked from time to time, Lord Mormont, lest we start to take ourselves too seriously.
Hello and welcome to Two Champs and a Chump, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast founded in 2010 by Will Lentz, myself, Brett Zeiler, and Greg Atkinson. Major props go out to FFG for putting out a great game, George R. R. Martin for an amazing product, Card Game DB for our hosting, and Josh Woodward to the Creative Commons license music you hear today. Welcome to Season 3.
Those are words that Daryl lives by.
Yeah.
Seriously.
True story. If you can't laugh at me, well, who can
you laugh at?
And here I always thought we were laughing with Daryl.
Oh, yeah.
I believe it's towards Daryl.
Twert?
Toward Daryl?
Oh, toward Daryl.
In his
toward.
Direction.
Yeah.
Well, my name is Brett Zeiler.
Will Lentz.
Daryl.
And special guest star.
Chris Jackie Chiodo. Chan.
We don't have Jackie Chan.
Oh.
That was a lie.
Dang it. Oh. I tried.
We do have Chris Schoenthal, though.
Yay.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you on the show, Chris.
You
even
may
if
recognize
my other co-hosts aren't.
From another podcast.
Glad to be here.
One
formerly of another podcast.
Formerly competing podcast.
Until we bust some meats.
Until we sabotage.
Yeah, thank you guys for the
operation.
Thanks for the check to get me off that podcast. It was worth it, and it's been nice here in Hawaii.
I'm glad. $25 billion goes pretty far.
Zeiler paid that out of his personal war chest.
I did.
Yeah, I mean that's pocket change. I can't open up my pocket purse for anything less than $1 trillion.
I mean, because we are rolling in the podcast dough these days.
Yeah, so good money in podcasts. Really good money.
Seriously, invest.
The real question is how much you paid the new Canadian host to sabotage the podcast.
Surprisingly little, actually, thanks to that exchange rate.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
It cost us like $4. And a burger with mayo on it.
And honestly, we had to force them to get the $4 in there. They really just wanted that burger.
Turns out they're actually made with ham in Canada. This beef thing, he was pretty pumped.
Are we sure it's not moose in Canada?
I believe the plural is meese, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's moose meat. I'm not saying there's meese involved.
Ah.
I mean, well, multiple meese would make a lot of meat.
they would indeed. think of all the people you could feed.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, literally the population of Canada. There could be more than like 6 or 7 people up there, right?
I don't know.
Something like that, yeah. Okay, so we've turned into the moose eating podcast this week.
Oh, we don't eat meese. Canadians do.
Well, no, I didn't say that we did, but we suddenly were about moose.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Yes,
and I can talk about that for hours.
Yeah, wow, you're an expert on the topic. Right. I hear internationally published.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a meeseologist.
Yeah. Yeah, peer reviewed.
Yep.
Dear God. Let's move on.
thank you, Daryl.
That joke is far past dead.
Oh my God. I think it was dead as soon as we said
just
it.
Just like the moose.
Exactly.
And that podcast.
And our podcast if we keep this up.
Yes.
Okay.
All right, so what's on the docket for this evening, gents?
Well, we've got a couple things. I think we've got some big news out of Minnesotan territories.
Borderline Canada.
What's that?
Borderline Canada.
Exactly what I was thinking. They may have some meese skip down below the border.
Every once in a while.
I think you guys talked a couple episodes ago about how they're putting in a cafe in their event center, and I'm wondering if that's going to be on the menu.
Meese burgers.
Oh, we can only hope.
Okay, that's the last one to make that joke, guys.
Okay.
Anything else that happens is on you guys.
Fair enough. And then after that, I think we'll use our guest host to hit the next house on our docket. Greyjoy. But let's start with the news out of the north.
Let's start with it.
So what do we have?
A new FAQA.
FAQA. And a small attorney rules update. Cannot be forgotten.
Right.
As it might be the most important thing that happened.
The update to the attorney rules is probably the easiest thing to cover. So how about we mention that? What got updated there?
Well, it was announced that the third pack in the King's Road cycle, called the King's Guard, is legal for Worlds, even though it has not released yet and probably won't release until the end of the month.
Yeah, it's going to be real close to you, Worlds.
Yeah.
How's that for shaking up the meta? I don't know. It looks like the pack's going to be a pretty strong pack.
Mm-hmm. I mean, for Shadows.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be tight tits, for sure.
I think that realistically, it's not as big a deal to make it legal for Worlds since Worlds is at FFG's home. You know, if they don't have the product there, then nobody has the product, and it's not going to matter whether it's legal or not.
Right. But if folks are waiting and getting it at the FFG headquarters World Championship weekend, that could be a problem.
That's what day one of Worlds is.
I'm sincerely hoping it gets spilled before them. But we'll see.
At least we'll have that empty day on Thursday for people to build decks and test, though.
Unless you're playing Star Wars.
Yeah, good point.
I mean, it might be that it'll be Friday.
All right, you and I can cuddle.
Yeah, Friday. Sorry, I think I misspoke which day I meant there. That's my bad.
Yeah, Friday's the Netrunner day, I believe, and I'm not playing that.
Gotcha.
And then
there's a little bit of other stuff that's tweaked here, but I think it's probably better to cover it in the FAQ discussion since it's also
more than there. Yes. All right. So what's up first for the FAQ updates?
Very first, I'm scrolling down the FAQ here. I wish kind of that this PDF was not so large because it makes it difficult to scroll.
Mm-hmm. That's what they say about me.
Mm-hmm. All right. Update number one, the Kings of the Sea, Randall Tarley, now has the proper number of L's.
Yes. Which ruins my double Randall Tarley deck I was bringing to Worlds.
Ah, well, there's a tier one deck that just hit the garbage can.
Randall Tarley, power and Randall Tarley.
Whew. Way to be.
I mean, I'm a fan of any kind of updates like this.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, as printed, you could play both in the same deck at the same time.
The rules.
And the neutral one would give plus two to the other one that already has melee. That would be a big Randall Tarley.
Big, big Randall Tarley.
Yep.
But no more. That is fixed. Right. Will, what's up next? I'm not gonna lie, I don't have the FAQ in front of me.
Okay, fair enough. I've got it in front of me. I'll read all the updates then.
I'm a fan of
next is everyone's favorite wildling, Val, who has a new addition here that a player who has reached his or her draw cap may not trigger Val's reveal and draw effect. Which is interesting. I guess when it was changed over to a draw as a way to cap her card advantage, I guess I'd never really thought before about the way, like, the order of that was worded would allow people to still keep revealing. Now, what exactly that affects without them being able to draw it, I don't know what situation prompted that. Do you guys happen to know?
I don't know. It seems like just a clarification to me.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, it didn't seem like a major change.
No.
No,
the only thing I can think of is maybe something with that weird Night's Watch guy Satin. You look at the top of your deck, and if you don't want it there, you can trash it, but he reveals anyway, so that's
I don't know. Maybe if you get some funky stuff going in Melee, where you get, like, what's his name, Captain Grolio in play, and your opponent has an attachment on the top of their deck, and they keep using Val so you can win the game off of Grolio. I don't know, but that sounds like collusion.
You could allow your opponent to draw a bunch of cards with Grandmaster Pycelle.
Brilliant.
True.
Brilliant.
But no, I'm pretty sure, I mean, it just seems to mostly probably just be ruled the way most people are already playing the card.
Yeah. I believe you are correct. All right, let's see, what else is up? There's a slight addition to the ban list update, wherein they took a couple cards off the ban list.
You mean the restricted list?
No,
the ban list.
Yeah, there's a slight update where they mentioned that the cards were taken off of the ban list in version 4.1.
Oh.
Yes, exactly. Then after that, we hit on the bigger one. This one is an update to the restricted list.
Okay.
All right, so here we go. Going on to the Joust restricted list, we have Manning the City Walls. And I think in a surprise move to many people, we actually have several cards coming off of the Joust restricted list. We have Bear Island, Aegon's Hill, Knight of Flowers, No Quarter, and Pentoshi Manor.
Hmm. Yeah. Just those couple cards there really serve the meta a lot, I think, actually.
Yeah, I think that's really going to throw things off. I mean, Stark just got a whole bunch more teeth getting Bear Island and No Quarter back. You think your Knight deck is viable again?
It definitely could be. Definitely could be.
I mean, because that puts it back in the same state it was before.
It doesn't have refugees anymore, basically. You have to choose between Mira and No Quarter. But gotcha. Aside from that, it's pretty much the exact same.
Wait, no, you don't.
Sorry, Mira and Narrow Escape.
Okay.
I misspoke. My apologies.
There we go.
It feels like they were fixing with this update. They had cautiously added a couple of locations that they were very scared of with the inception of House of Dreams, and they've realized that there's enough answers to House of Dreams now that those can come off, especially with Rally Cry being printed. That card just absolutely crushes House of Dreams. I've killed at least three Houses of Dreams with that plot in the last week.
Ouch.
You home wrecker.
I think you're completely correct. Between that and then the fact that No Agenda, as they release more cards to support No Agenda, is a more viable option to House of Dreams. I'm pretty sure that I'm pretty sure you're exactly right. It's just them taking some locations off that they were scared of initially.
You know, I was starting to kind of like this Aegon's Hill light meta that we were in, though. Now I can't help but feel like it's going to be all over the place again.
Probably.
And that card just wrecks games.
It is pretty powerful.
Yeah.
And then we've got the Knight of Flowers.
I mean, seems obvious if there's a bunch more neutral Shadows cards that any deck can run now, that there's so much protection against them that there's no reason for strict.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty pathetic update for Baratheon. They needed a little more than another three-cost renowned character that's pretty much nothing special.
Yeah, I think, especially what Chris was saying with these neutral Shadows cards that'll be floating around now, like taking the Knight of Flowers off of the restricted list not only is not enough of a like strength bump to Baratheon, I'm not actually convinced it is a strength bump. I think it'll just be the same as when he was restricted.
Yeah.
I mean, you'll probably still see a copy of him pretty much.
You'll still see him around, but I don't think they're like the strength of their house really changed at all.
No, it did not. They're still pretty down near the bottom in house rankings.
Yep. Pentoshi Manor, though.
Oh, that is a different story entirely.
Oh, dear Lord.
I mean, that one certainly seems bananas. I'm kind of surprised to see it come off. Although people have been clamoring for the Castellan to come off for years, so I guess giving them something back is not that big a surprise.
I am legit kind of surprised. I would have thought that the Castellan would come off before the Manor.
I love Pentoshi Manor so much, guys.
Yeah,
I mean, with the Castellan already being like limited by the limited response thing and the no attachments, and of course attachments are way more viable than they used to be. I definitely would have seen that before Pentoshi Manor.
But we've already seen early on in this cycle that there's going to be some super easy strength boosts coming in, and sure the loss of that keyword could be harsh for you. But I like Pentoshi Manor as far as it's just a no weenie entry challenge. which is by far the most annoying thing that happens in a game. So I'm happy to be able to play the card again. Yeah, nobody loves to do it more than you will.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And I'm like, fuck. Anyways, so I can see why it came off as far as denying the rush decks a little more. And, like I said, there's going to be strength boosts probably throughout this entire cycle, at least when it comes to the Bannermen. So, yeah. But it's still a pretty serious card.
Yeah. Especially in, I could actually see a lot of Targ, especially with supported by the Smith being an option, running some Potoshi Manners out of house.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking about that too. It combos very nicely with the kind of deterrent burn.
Mm-hmm.
Desperate Measures is already a great card in a house that wants influence like Targ. You throw in the support there to put those Manners back into play on the cheap. It starts looking pretty sweet.
Mm-hmm.
So we talked a lot about everything that came off, but we sort of skipped over the big one that went on.
Yeah.
What do we think the impact of manning the city walls onto the list is?
I don't know. I feel like that having manning city walls added on is kind of just because it was kind of everywhere. Like, I was actually looking through some decks this evening. And I had, all but one of my decks had Manning the City Walls in it.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a really great card.
Yeah. I guess I never jumped on that bandwagon. But armies have been pushed a lot.
Yeah. And I think a part of that was their move to try and hamstring the Martell Quentin deck with those popping those Bannermen into play.
Oh, yeah. More than likely. That's probably one of the big reasons for it, more than anything else.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Starting out with it and the two claim was pretty, pretty strong. I'm still not sold on it necessarily being restricted worthy, but I definitely admit it was a pretty strong opening play if you had that draw.
Yeah. I don't think it's because the card itself is broken. I think they're just trying to steer the metagame in a different direction. You know.
Right. It's restricted the same reason that Laughing Storm and Val were restricted together. It's breaking up the combo with the Bannermen.
Yeah.
It's kind of unfortunate, really, that it sort of had some side effects on other decks. Like, I've seen Greyjoy using it recently. I've seen Stark using it a lot. And even Baratheon, we talk about them not getting much out of this FAQ. Like, that's actually kind of a big hit for them.
Yeah.
And you're also also with Lannister, one of their best decks right now is the Kevin No Agenda. Less because of Kevin, more because of the House Clegane Brigands.
Yeah, dropping the Brigands in is nice.
It's a hit against them also. Especially because Lannister's the house that can most easily ignore the one gold on the plot.
Mm-hmm.
We're moving on?
Maybe just one last quick thought on that. Do we think that will change up the house standings at all? Do we have a feel on that? You think it's enough to push those bottom houses up?
Giving Stark back Bear Island isn't a huge deal, honestly, because let's be fair, 99% of Stark decks aren't going to play it. No Quarter, on the other hand, is a big shot in the arm for them, because now they can play No Quarter and Mira again. And that's a big deal.
Yeah, No Quarter is a fatty card.
Yeah, I'm nice. Terrified. Waiting to see. Well, I'm sure you're adding it back into your Wildling deck, Daryl, and I'll probably see it on Saturday.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, so it's too good.
Yeah, Stark and Lannister both got a pretty big shot in the arm. Targ, they weren't necessarily a weak house, and giving them Aegon Sale back is just another really strong tool they have. Baratheon, like we said, is pretty much exactly where it was to begin with.
So we think the biggest winner, Stark, followed by Lanny, then?
Yeah, sure. Probably.
I think Lannister was almost at the top already, so it's kind of surprising. Like, they get another really good card back, but I don't think that they had much higher to go, to be honest.
I thought Lanny was pretty middle of the pack, honestly. They have a couple of decent builds, and aside from that, there's not a lot. Aside from Lanny Tunnels and Lanny Kevin, nothing else they have is super competitive.
Yeah, I think From reading the letter from the designers along with the article there, I'm thinking a lot's based on the results from Gen Con, and Lanny didn't do spectacularly there as far as I hear.
Yeah, they had one in the top 8, but that was about it. Or top 16. I don't think that any of them made top 8.
Gotcha. All right. Well, we've also got an update to the Melee restricted list. This one kind of reverses that what we saw with the Joust. We've got only one coming off and three going on.
Mm-hmm.
We have the Pyromancer's Cache coming off.
Which is really cool, I think.
Yeah.
Not that I really care about Melee that much, but it's about time.
It's really good, and it's going to really speed up some Melee decks, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
And then going on, we have War of the Five Kings, Battle of the Bay, and... scroll down here. Battle for the Shield Islands.
Yeah, all the pretty much all the neutral epic battles that let you choose whatever challenge type you want. I guess Battle of the Bay is only military, but the other two let you choose.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. So stopping those Stark Siege Power Rush decks.
They could get pretty absurd.
They could.
Though the article there mentioned that it was possible in other houses. I can see it being possible depending on having a pretty crazy draw and being able to use, I don't know, say, To the Spears out of Martell.
Like Gain Brigands that we just talked about to do some intrigues.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Along with Maester Kraelin to pay some gold to get some powers.
Yeah, you sure could, but that's a lot more resource intensive.
Absolutely true.
For a lot lower payout. I think what the problem, at least from playing against Stark Siege and Melee, the problem was it was so fast it would be, you know, within not just striking distance of a win, it would be all but assured the win by the end of a first turn if things went, you know, rather decently for them, and it didn't take anything too outlandish to get to that point.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. Yeah. I'm fine with it.
Yeah, I don't care particularly much about Melee either way.
Seconded.
Yeah, I'm not. Whatever.
Man, am I the only one that enjoys Melee? We need to.
Sounds like you are.
We need to get some booze.
I used to enjoy
have
Melee.
A good Melee game, guys.
Yeah.
We should go play at Cody's or something.
Maybe.
All right. Well, moving on. We've also got a very important clarification on card ability types.
Yes.
This specifies that flavor text is not considered a card ability, is not considered a part of a card's text box, and has no interaction with any game text.
Thank goodness, I was getting tired of reading all that fine print to find the word winter.
Yeah.
And summer.
Are you shitting me? Oh, man. I didn't even think to look at the flavor text.
Oh, really?
Such a fool!
It was right there. I mean, I don't think, like, it was kind of gimmicky, but I don't think it was, like, too OP to allow that to stand. I mean, it's there. It's literally inside the text box. Now, they may have ruled it's not part of the text box, but literally it's in that place on the card printed there. And so I was perfectly fine with letting people look for it as far as Green Dreams goes.
No, that's fucking retarded, Will. I mean, it's not overpowered at all. Not the slightest, because I think there's only like 2 or 3 cards total that you can hit with it. But no, it's fucking stupid.
That was considerably less retarded than your dual Randall idea.
Dual Randall's a thing, bro.
Yeah, I'll take
the man's got a point. It's two different guys.
Yeah.
You know,
Randall and Randall.
Spelled Daryl? Like, come on.
Yeah, one of them doesn't have an L.
Yeah, see? Dairy.
Yes. Dairy. Oh, can we start calling him Randy?
Randy.
Okay. So that's I think probably about all there is to say on the flavor text entry, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Let's see. We've had an update for partial fulfillment of effects. If an effect attempts to search, look at, discard, reveal, or draw a specified number of cards that is greater than the number of cards remaining in a player's hand, deck, discard pile, or dead pile, the effect is performed to the greatest extent possible upon the remaining cards in the affected game area. That is awesome to have in there for sure, because that means the crazy combo stuff with Much and More and Desperate Measures can indeed dig all the way down to the very, very bottom of your deck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you're chaining Much and Mores with just too much, with a Much and More left in your deck and a Much and More in your hand, you can do it.
Yep. You sure can.
I don't have much
probably
more to say about that.
Worked all along. Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I was pretty sure it had been ruled that way before. Mm-hmm. I think this is just codifying it,
making it official in paper.
Yep. And I'm good with that because I like those kind of wonky recursion decks that try to dig through as quick as they can. So I'm all for it.
Absolutely.
Here's another one that I think had been ruled this way a long time ago, but is finally being codified in the FAQ. This is, if a copy of a unique character that a player owns and controls would be put into play by a card effect, that copy enters play as a duplicate of that character. So, pretty straightforward there. If you've got Khal Drogo in play, and you use Ambush on the Plains to put a copy of him from your discard pile into play, it immediately attaches as a duplicate.
Yep. Also things like Into the Breach and Fiery Kiss.
Indeed. All right, we've got another one here, and this one is actually fairly applicable. This is Phase and Round Limits. A limit on an effect on a card that remains in play through the resolution of the effect applies to the copy of the card on which the limit is printed. A limit on an effect on a card that never enters play, such as an event card, or leaves play as a result of the resolution of the effect.
Preston Greenfield.
yeah. Such as Den of the Wolf or Preston Greenfield. I love that Den of the Wolf is used as an example because I literally cannot name the last time I saw someone play that card.
Yeah.
But anyway, returning to Shadows applies to all copies of that card by title. Limits always apply only to the player who is using the ability. For instance, if one player plays a copy of an event card with the text limit one per phase, that player's opponent may also play his or her own copy of that event during that phase.
Yeah, I mean, basically it really is just stopping the Preston Greenfield Madness before it begins.
Yes, which is really, really, really good to do.
Yes, yeah,
absolutely.
And well, I'm shocked you're not more upset about this. I'm sure you had some kind of crazy combo deck in your head.
Oh, I had ideas in mind. Believe me, I had ideas. But I also kept looking at that sort of stuff and kept thinking, this is going to unbalance the game. Mm-hmm. I can't see how these Kingsguard are not going to unbalance the game getting to trigger these many times.
Yeah.
I think it's still going to be something to watch, even with the limit enforced. I think they're still going to be pretty strong, but we'll see how it shakes out.
Mm-hmm.
We've also got an entry here on face-down cards. Face-down cards that are not in a player's deck may be looked at by their controller at any time. Players may not look at an opponent's face-down cards.
Take that, Daryl. You can't look at my face-down cards.
Damn.
Yep, I think this is just codifying something we've all been doing for a long time. But I believe in particular this is probably because of the black sales agenda. Mm-hmm. Because this basically means you can look at your hold.
Yeah.
And your Davos dupe.
And indeed. Your Davos dupe. Yeah. Which I have definitely already been doing before, just to see.
Same. Yeah.
Yes.
I was not doing that.
Because you never played Davos.
Greg would do it. I'd be like, what the hell are you doing? He's like, I'm allowed to look at the bottom of this card. I'm like, no, you're not. Oh, well.
He totally is, Daryl.
Yeah, I know.
Now he is.
Now I know.
It was kind of fuzzy before, evidently. Okay, we're going to keep scrolling, because I know that there are a couple more entries here.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of getting to them as we go. Okay, here's one that I think the more in-depth rules gurus than myself are going to have to tackle. This is a entry under Moribund State for events. And this says, when an event card is played during steps 1, 2, or 5 of an action window, and now here's the new text, unless it enters play as part of the resolution of its effect, e.g. Risen from the Sea, it enters a Moribund State after its resolution, and is only actually moved to the discard or dead pile on step 6 of the action window in which it was played. Now this threw me for a loop when I was reading it, I'm going to admit. Then I went on to read the next sentence. A Moribund event is not considered in play and is not under the command of the person who played it. Thank God, because I about had a heart attack thinking that we were now going to be putting events in play where they could be otherwise affected.
Yeah.
that would create some fun situations with trait manipulation, I imagine.
Almost certainly. So I'm sure there are situations that this is good to have it clarified for. I'm going to hope that it's nothing that really applies to me and that this is an update that just makes things play the way they are supposed to play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure. But I mean, it basically just is telling you when to put it in the discard pile.
Right. Yeah, because if it's not in play and it's not under anyone's command, I'm not really sure what relevance that Moribund State has other than just literally having to spell out every inch of how you move that card.
Mm-hmm. Which I'm sure is what it is.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we've also got an entry added underneath the passive abilities are triggered. And this states that attachment cards that were attached to cards that are leaving play are discarded passively and go Moribund themselves at this time. So there you go. They are part of a passive resolution.
Yes, indeed.
So I think that's, again, pretty straightforward. I'm sure most folks were playing that mostly correctly.
Already.
Yeah. All right. We're still scrolling. We're going to get down through the flow charts.
I got the next one ready if you want me to read it.
You do? Awesome.
I do.
Do it.
So the next one applies to our newly errated Jaqen H'ghar. The question is, which keywords may I select for Jaqen H'ghar to gain when using his ability? And the previous section had explained that it allows him to get any unqualified keywords that don't require additional text or qualifications. So basically, you can't gain things like immune to this because immunities all have to be qualified, and you
yes.
can't gain any... no attachments except this, things like that. And the new text says, this entry applies only to which keywords may be named and gained by Jaqen H'ghar's effect. Specifically, his controller cannot name any additional qualifications when gaining a keyword. Cards that copy or steal keywords from other cards may successfully interact with both qualified and unqualified keywords.
Can I really take affront at this? This is incorrect usage of the FAQ. At this point, they're telling us that, like, because we had this big rules thing after this update was added with this question about Jaqen, right? As a frequently asked question, which is literally as a question, right? Which sets up rule scenarios for people and then outlines how interactions work. Now, that is the sort of thing that should be used for rulings that will be applied for abilities and situations that work the same way, like, say, Banner Bearer, the attachment, mm-hmm. right? But what this new additional text says is this gigantic long entry should just be an errata to Jaqen's errata text because it applies to literally nothing else.
Yeah, only him.
So what this entire, at this point now, rather long paragraph entry should have actually just been an errata to Jaqen's ability so that it said that you can choose any non-qualified keyword, and then none of this would have ever happened. And that annoys me.
I mean, Will's just annoyed about where in the actual document it is located.
It's just kind of a waste of space and effort when it should have just been like a two-word, errata to his ability. But
I think this may be the only place in the document that qualified and unqualified keywords are defined, though.
Yes. It is. Because when this was when the first paragraph was originally added, we were like, okay, what does this stuff really mean? And actually, really, that's probably a good point. Since this is so specific that these are not used anywhere else, and this entry now tells us not to use that anywhere else specifically, it really, his errata should have just listed the keywords that you can choose. And then they never would have had to have invent qualified and unqualified keywords to only apply to Jacken. Why?
But then they would have to update his errata every time they come up with a new keyword.
No, they wouldn't. They'd just pick a list of keywords and keep it at that.
But before Joust and Melee came out, he wouldn't have been able to gain them unless it was listed in his
list of initial keywords. They would have just picked a list of keywords and just left it at that would have been the easiest.
Well, that's stupid.
Yeah, I'm glad that he's pretty dynamic.
Sort of, but like they had to invent two new rules terms just for his ability and then tell us that those brand new rules terms only apply to him and nothing else.
I mean, only apply to him for now.
Even other things that work the same way. I don't know. It just
Will's panties are just a twist.
It shows poor planning, I think. Poor planning.
Moving on. Perhaps.
Okay. Who's up on reading that next one, then?
William.
Okay, I've got it. In order to successfully defend a challenge and use the effect of the white book agenda... Sorry, I almost read the card number. Do you need to win the challenge? Answer, yes, you must win a challenge as the defending player in order to successfully defend it.
Finally I can sleep at night.
I'm depressed.
I was really worried about that one, guys.
The hell?
I wasn't worried. I was excited. If all you had to do was successfully declare a defender, it might have been playable. Especially with the new Kingsguard. I mean, it was a pretty funky reading of it on some slightly missed wording there.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of wish they'd ran with it, because that actually would have been a big boost to the white book.
To a terrible agenda.
Yes. An agenda that really needs it, because as far as we've seen with these new Kingsguard, they don't interact with it in any way, shape, or form.
No, not really. Aside from the characters that can defend challenges.
Yeah, they have the Kingsguard trait.
So if they're on the board, they have to get knelt if you don't have any power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, they interact.
Sorry. In any positive way, how's that?
Fair.
Okay. I accept.
All right, next one.
Next one.
All right, what is the proper pregame and deck cutting procedure for the Black Sails agenda? Now, this one's fun, listeners. Buckle your seatbelts. First,
I just want to leave with, I'm actually really excited about seeing this.
Okay.
By the way,
first, shuffle your deck, then present it to your opponent for additional shuffling and/or a final cut. The opponent shuffles and cuts to his or her satisfaction to determine the final ordering of the cards in the deck. You are then responsible for making one cut that splits the deck into two stacks. Guess that earlier cut wasn't so final, huh? You may not reorder or count cards during this process. If, on a visual comparison of the two stacks, they are not to your liking, you may return the deck to its original composition, without altering the original order of the cards, and make an additional attempt at the cut. You may make up to three attempts at this cut without delaying the game. Not sure how... You're going to avoid delaying that.
Beyond that, it is delaying the game.
Exactly.
You're allowed three.
After a successful cut is made, present the two stacks to your opponent, who then chooses one stack as your deck and the other as your hold. Once your deck is selected, proceed withdrawing your initial hands. If you choose to mulligan, you only mulligan your deck. Your hold is locked in at this point.
I mean, I was completely serious before, guys. I'm actually really excited to see this, because I was definitely doing the Black Sails wrong.
Yeah, a lot of people were very carefully counting out the number of cards to ensure an even split between the two decks.
Absolutely.
Now, most folks that I saw, you know, allowed things to be cut, and, you know, you could watch fairly well, unless they were pretty good sleight of hand folks. Greg, I doubt that they were, you know, setting up their hold too much, but it's good to have this in writing, even if it has to be overly exact because of it.
I think there are ways to allow it to be completely random and still counted, so it's a little disappointing, but realistically the difference between 31 cards and 27 cards in one pile or the other is fairly minimal.
Mm-hmm.
Either your deck has the capacity to reach the bottom of your actual deck in any situation, like the Val Laughing Storm combo often did, or it doesn't anyway and it's not going to matter. That's how I view it anyways.
I don't know, I'm crazy. I like things to be exactly even.
You're never going to play Black Souls again, are you?
I mean, I'll throw those guys that takes my full three to make sure they stack up exactly even to each other.
Okay. Just don't delay the game while you do so.
Hey, I got three.
There's nothing about scale, so you could weigh each side, maybe.
You could, yeah.
I also think this is interesting that it codifies, and maybe this has always been in the tournament rules and I just didn't read them carefully. It also codifies back in that first paragraph that you're allowed to shuffle your opponent's deck as a means of randomization. Mm-hmm. It's not just a cut.
Yep. Yeah,
absolutely.
I thought that had been allowed for some time.
It's certainly possible. I might not have read it.
Yeah.
As far as I know, it is. I know, you know, I don't think I've ever had someone shuffle my deck. It's always just a gentleman's cut, but it is perfectly legal.
All right, I think we've got one last entry here.
All right.
If a character enters play through an effect, like Fiery Kiss, that would cause that character to leave play at the end of the phase or round, but the character enters play as a duplicate, because the player already owns and controls another copy of that character, what happens at the end of the phase? Answer, the check. If that character is still in play, cannot be made, as the card entered play as a duplicate, the duplicate remains in play at the end of the phase, which... I thought was the way we'd been playing that for a long time anyway, so
yeah.
I guess that's good to have officially in here.
I don't know. I know some people that were up in arms about it over the last day or two as I've been browsing the forums at work about how I think it was one of the Tulsa guys that said they made the opposite ruling in the last couple weeks, so some people were pretty up in arms about that.
Gotcha. Well, not the first time we've had an FAQ update quickly counteract other rules.
Yeah, a designer ruling, yeah.
Yeah.
It does happen. You know, that's how I always played it.
Agreed. Well, any other pressing thoughts on this FAQ update? Do we think it's a solid one? Here we are a month before Worlds.
Yeah, once again, I don't love the timing, but that's been a common theme of FAQ updates for FFG I've found in the last 2 years that I've been playing the game.
Yeah,
but other than that, I think I don't have a particular problem with any of the changes themselves.
No. I wish I'd taken more cards off the restricted list, honestly.
There's a couple more that I would have liked to have seen, and one that I'm still kind of amazed is not on there. I will continue yet again my amazement at not seeing Wintertime Marauders on that list.
What a segue, Will.
Almost. I didn't quite want to segue because I had one other hypothetical thought. Do you ever think maybe they do these almost last-minute FAQ updates on purpose?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
In an attempt to shake up the meta as much as possible before a tournament?
Yeah, I'm absolutely sure that's why it is.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's a similar reason to what Magic does with having their first pro tour of every season be standard immediately following the set release. I kind of wish FFG would do a better job of getting their sets out there in the public eye before these things happen, but that's how they choose to do it.
Yeah, that might be a different topic entirely, I suppose, but...
Yeah, we don't need to go down that rabbit hole now.
Yes. But okay, I think things will be quite sufficiently shaken up between these last couple chapter packs and now this new update.
All right. Well, I've been asked on as a special guest for the Greyjoy House expert, in quotes.
Now, what makes you an expert on Greyjoy?
I believe I was asked here as an expert on Greyjoy due to my performance at Gen Con. I got fourth place with a Greyjoy Damp Hair deck, and the other three decks in the top four were all Martell Quentin decks, I believe.
I think Greyjoy Black Sails was in third.
Oh, was there another Greyjoy out there? Okay. So I was going to say, I think I might have been the only Greyjoy in the top 16, but apparently there were at least two.
I know for a fact there were two Greyjoys in the top 16.
Good. That's excellent news.
Yeah, I think, wasn't it Alex's Black Sails that also
made it? God, I have no idea who played it. I wasn't at Gen Con.
Well, I was hoping one of the folks that was there could back me up.
It's if it was anybody's, it was Alex's, because I don't believe it was Dr. Nash's, so... Those are the two likely candidates. I know Corey from DC was also playing it, but did not finish the tournament.
No, he 4-0 dropped.
He did.
Yeah, these things.
But he played the last round out just for me. He told me, so I was happy about that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good.
So where do we want to start? I guess. My history with the house. I will have to admit that I'm mostly a Jamie player. I don't really have any strong house loyalties.
Respect.
And actually, I've outside of Gen Con, every tournament that I've played with a Greyjoy deck has been pretty mediocre finishes. Neither of my original wins were with a Greyjoy deck, and none of the other big tournaments I've had any great success with them. If I had to get locked into a house, I'd say probably Martell is closer to where I am, but really I play whatever I feel like is a strong deck at the time.
That sounds exceptionally Jamie of you.
That's my role. So I will have to be completely honest and say that the deck that I got fourth at Gen Con with, I built at approximately 1 a.m. The day of the joust. That was not something that I'd been, you know, running for 10 months. I was just something that I put together because I didn't have a better option. And it turned out really, really well placed.
It's funny how many of the decks that do really well at Gen Con are constructed on that kind of time frame.
Yeah.
So, What would you like to talk about? Would you like to talk about that deck? I mean, it's kind of outdated now, so do we want to talk about deck types of Greyjoy in general and where they stand?
Yeah, and what we've been doing in the last couple of weeks is looking at the competitive deck types of each individual house and, you know, talking about some of the key cards, how it fares, that sort of thing.
All right, sounds good.
But as the expert guests, I'll let you steer the conversation. We'll talk about the deck types in order as you see fit.
Sure.
Mr. Expert.
Let's start with the one that's probably... There's two that are pretty close that are probably tier two decks, I would say, that are kind of off the wall, and that would be like an unopposed deck with lots of Intimidate and Warships and the Iron Fleet Captains that we got a few packs back, and then a Greyjoy Holy deck. I know they got... They got a little love recently in the Longship Golden Shower.
I still think that was kind of redundant for those decks.
Yeah, and that's where I believe that's correct as well. It doesn't make a lot of sense to give all of your holy characters a military icon when you have two plots guaranteed in your plot deck that give all of your holy characters a military icon.
Yeah, well, and
you're in a Greyjoy house.
Already have it.
Exactly. So that I don't think that would actually go in a holy deck of that sort. But, I mean, you do still have Power of Faith, which is an amazing plot. You have the Victarion that came out, was exciting, and then quickly got overshadowed by the Naval Victarion. But I really still like the Holy Victarion a lot. In a normal Greyjoy deck, obviously, I'd still play the Naval, but the renowned Holy Victarion that gets bonuses for your warships is still good. Dan Pear still goes in that deck. He's got a Holy Crest. Yeah. You might even use him as your character agenda. And then you have cards like Captain of the Iron Fleet giving out renown and just go crazy. So that would be one deck that people could look at. But probably not something we're going to see a lot of at the top tables at Worlds.
No, almost definitely not.
Yeah.
So I would put that in the tier two as the categories that you guys are using.
That's tier two, if that.
Yeah, that's. I think it's still tier two.
I think Foley can definitely be tier two.
Sure.
Unopposed, I don't feel real good about in Joust these days, but.
Yeah, I agree. There might be a build out there because there's just enough cards that do unopposed stuff that maybe it can work, especially maybe with that Scaling Ladder card that just came out. I haven't messed with Scaling Ladder, but it seems like it fits right into that deck.
True.
So there could be something there, but yeah, I don't expect to see it. Going from there, I guess the next one up on my list would be a Greyjoy Maester deck. Again, it's not something I expect to see a lot of, but it's, well, it was still viable until Tar got Aegon's Heel back, because I think that gave people the impetus to remember that Targ is still a good house.
Yeah.
And Targ really destroys Greyjoy Maesters pretty badly.
Yeah, they had the Conclaves to kind of help counter that, and I definitely won against a Targ deck at our, let's see, that was the Moon Boy, I believe it was.
Until you lost one.
Right, but I mean, I definitely beat one solely from top decking a Conclave.
Mm-hmm.
Losing them to the restricted list definitely hurt, but yes. As Targ kind of fell out of a little bit of favor, it seemed like it was still okay, but if Aegon's Hill pushes Targ back again, then it doesn't look all that great.
No, it's not promising.
No. Their Maesters is too tiny.
I have a soft spot for Maesters, but I don't think they're getting there.
No.
So with those out of the way, I guess next best I would say would probably be Black Sails. I think that Black Sails has some really interesting tools, especially out of Greyjoy. Like you said, we saw him top four Gen Con along with my deck. And I think one of the really interesting cards that I saw in that deck and that really was a centerpiece is King Balon's Host.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to get that out consistently by getting it out of the hold and then manning the city walls until now. That'll be an interesting to see if that deck's still a thing without manning the city walls.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
Or they could choose it over Asha, I guess, but it's hard to get away from Asha.
Yeah, I think manning the city walls was a big part of that deck, and losing that for the host, and also Victarion's Reavers for the claim replacement that lets you get into House of Dreams locations.
Yeah, if they don't have other stuff on the board, though. You know, if you could hit it that first turn with the manning, for sure,
mm-hmm.
That was significantly worse, I think, as the game wore on.
Yeah.
So I've seen Black Sails actually go a couple different ways. I've seen it go pretty aggro out of Greyjoy, and I've seen it go the pretty toolboxy direction. The Balance Host and they're Reavers, right?
Yeah, Victarion's Reavers.
Mm-hmm.
I would think are definitely more likely to be seen in that toolboxy build. Do you think, you know, with the restriction of manning, then maybe we'll see people drift more towards the kind of aggro-y beatdown kind of build instead?
I haven't seen a fast version like what you're talking about, so I'm not really sure. But if I had to pick one right now, as much as I love Asha, I would look at whether or not I could get enough Kings and Queens into my deck to hard cast the Balon's Host.
Mm-hmm.
And if I couldn't, I think I might still go with manning, because that card, I watched a couple games, and I've played a couple games with it since, where it just destroys certain decks. Like, for instance, that Quentin deck. I mean, everybody has Vengeful. Oh, everybody lost Vengeful.
Yeah, nobody has anything anymore.
And that deck relies on Vengeful.
Most of them do have Renown.
Yeah,
they
rely on Renown to win the game, and that gets dropped, and so it's that card is just really well placed right now, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it would be difficult to not play that in a deck like that.
Hmm.
I'm not a big fan of Black Sails in general. So.
Yeah, I think with it's funny we mentioned Targ coming back potentially killing Greyjoy Maesters. I think if people remember that Lannister's a good house with Pentoshi Manor coming back, that could be somewhat the downfall of Black Sails, because then you get Neil back, and that deck does not do well in an environment full of targeted control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, then it makes it just way too hard to get that extra character in for the Naval Challenge. And...
yeah, it's really rough. I played a Bear of Black Sails at one of our regionals, and the games that it got to do its Naval Challenges, it was great, and the games it didn't, it just fell on its face. So I would bet probably a Maesters, but maybe not quite tier 1.5.
Without any city walls, I definitely agree. Losing that is a pretty big hit to the regular Black Sails. They also lose their fleets. Or they got to lose their fleets. It gets a lot harder to play the fleets.
Right, yeah. Especially if people like these no agendas.
Yeah.
If the no agenda stuff's going on, then your fleets are costing 7, and that's just untenable.
Yeah, that's way too much. That's way too much.
Well, I guess from there, we go to the Greyjoy-sized elephant in the room. Greyjoy Winter, I hear, is a good deck.
Mm.
Yeah, I've heard good things about this. Yeah. Now, are you thinking like a pretty solid choke theme, or kind of more, I don't know, winter good stuff, so to speak?
I mean, there's not really any reason to do both. I know one of the things you'd done, I listened to a couple of your previous episodes, like the Stark episode, and there was a segment on underutilized cards, and I was trying to come up with a list for those for this episode, and I was having a very difficult time, because Greyjoy deck lists are just so static most of the time. You see the same cards in every list. It's 3 Iron Mines, 2 Iron Cliffs, you see... Black Tide, you see...
the perils of being so efficient.
Exactly, and it's harder for them to get cards that slot into those decks without them being over the curve. That said, I think they actually have. The new Damp Hairs Drowned are just insane.
Yeah.
They are rocking. You think you'll wind up replacing the Distinguished Bosuns with them if we start seeing a lot more Shadows, or... yeah, that's what I was kind of leaning towards.
Really? Because I'm not with Lenny Tunnels and Tara Dragon Pit decks being this popular. I'm not feeling the Boatswain at this time.
I don't think you can ever take Bosuns out of a Greyjoy deck. It's just they're just too efficient. And even if you see, you know, one game in 3 that has a decent number of Shadows cards, there's still, you know, 1 cost claim soak. You don't have to use your saves on good characters.
I guess that's true.
Yeah.
But I think we can all agree that Damp Hairs Drowned are incredible.
Yeah. No, they're amazing. Okay. And they actually give a boost to the deck we just talked about previously in the Black Sails, since mm-hmm. they also get that Naval Intrigue, which is not something Greyjoy has a lot of.
That really helps their spread a lot.
It does. But back to our friend the Song of Ice. I don't really see any reason not to do both. You said efficient, like good cards or choke cards.
Well, I'm not sure it's necessarily you couldn't do both, but it feels like to me if you're bothering to include the choke cards, it really winds up being a choke deck.
See, it's interesting you say that, because The Damp Hair deck I played at Gen Con had Winter, it had 3 Marauders, and it had 3 Ice Fishermen. Mm-hmm. That was all it had. Mm-hmm. It didn't have any Burn and Pillage, it didn't have any, you know, plot choke like Dry Season or any of that stuff.
Yeah, then I would definitely put that more in the just good Winter stuff category than choke.
Like a hard choke deck.
Right.
See, those are always so iffy, just because if you miss on your choke and you don't get it at the right time, or you don't get enough of it, you just end up with a bunch of really bad cards mm-hmm. in your deck.
That's completely true.
You end up drawing Burn and Pillage late in the game and just wishing it were any other card in your deck. So, I mean, I guess out of those options, I would say clearly a Greyjoy good stuff with the winter effects is okay. The way that we're gonna see it. And I think the effect of the agenda is tough to undersell, because Greyjoy can operate with so few cards in their hand because they just draw cheap guys and they can play them all.
And they can save them all.
Absolutely.
Getting ruled by a decree is nothing for them. They don't care. So that's gonna be the deck that I would say we're gonna see pretty much everywhere. Mm-hmm. Although I will note, going back to my Gen Con deck, that I've heard a lot of talk about, if you're not running the season's agendas, you can't run a season. I just think that's just completely false. I think you have to build your deck in such a way that if it's the other season, you can get it back to neutral and keep it there so they're not getting their bonuses. But saying that, you know, say a Targ summer deck or something that just floats summer and doesn't play the agenda is just dead. Well, no, maybe Targ's actually a bad example, because Field of Fire is the main Targ summer card and one does rely on it being your own season. But my Dampair deck from Gen Con operated fine in a neutral environment. So as long as you have the carrion birds and your own birds to eventually knock it off and you know, maybe make it that season right when you need it to be, I don't think that the line about killing seasons in non-seasons decks is necessarily a huge drawback.
I don't know. If you are playing a deck like the one you were playing, where it is winter but fairly light winter, I think that's definitely true. But if you are playing a significant amount of one season or another, you really do have to play the season's agenda, in my opinion.
That's possible. I also think that's why a lighter sprinkling of seasons, I guess if you want to call it that, is a better way to go. Because if you think about it, like the old Kings of Summer and Winter deck, like that deck was almost on rails with its plot deck, because you always had to go get your bird first turn. Mm-hmm. And if you're going against the deck of the opposite season, you had to have a huge fight, and whoever lost that fight for even a turn was just dead in the water. Whereas now the new seasons allow a more dynamic metagame to exist, because you can, you know, for instance, I played a game with a Greyjoy Song of Ice the other night where I had great cards in my hand. It was going to take me two turns to play them all. So I didn't go get my bird and rule by decree myself the first turn, because it would be stupid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on that kind of line of thought about those agendas, kind of the standard wisdom that I've been following and seen from most other folks for a long time on those seasons decks, or seasonal decks in general, has been to run two of your particular Raven. I wonder if you're going to run one of the old Kings of agendas and kind of hope, you know, in the bad matchups to be able to pull it back to neutral, if it might be reasonable to bump those up to three,
I want to be clear about what I was saying previously. I don't think that the new Kings agendas are or the old Kings agendas are viable.
Yeah.
They take up your restricted slot, and they get super screwed by the new ones. I don't think you'll see those at all.
Yeah, I completely agree. If you are going to play them, you have to play three of your Raven, three Carrion Birds, three Ill Tidings. And that might not be
just, and you've lost your restricted card. But it's just the lengths until those come off the restricted list, the lengths you have to go to get value out of them are just too far.
Yeah.
Wonder if we'll be able to take them off the restricted list. We just had the new ones drop, so they're kind of the new hotness right now, which seems like it would make the old ones pretty unfavorable. But if they came off the restricted list, I wonder if everyone just gravitates back to them. And then the new ones don't shut them off. I don't know. That's a tough call.
It's a very interesting situation. I'm not sure what FFG's thoughts are on whether those are going to come off eventually, or whether they just are sort of going to languish there.
They're in limbo forever. Life.
I think that's probably fairly likely.
Yeah, more than yeah. Knowing FFG's current track record with the restricted lists.
We still have Castellan on there, like we mentioned earlier, and that's been on there since what, the core set? Is that right?
I mean, I mean, since day one of the restricted list.
Yes.
Yep.
So are there any other Greyjoy deck types that we've been missing out on?
I mean, I think we hit on pretty much all the major ones.
Do you think No Agenda / Damphair is still viable?
I do. I think Damphair is good. I think it's a little problematic because, like Jim was talking about in your Stark interview with the Kindly Man, you can't count on getting him right now unless you do something terrible like Summoning Season. Although Summoning Season would give me a use for my Gen Con promo, so maybe that's a good thing.
There you go.
But realistically, Damphair is a better character than Kindly Man, and he's
absolutely
so. So running three copies of him is not as big a deal as running three terrible one-strength allies that are going to die to a ton of different cards.
Yeah.
So I could see us still seeing Damphair decks. It'll just depend on how people feel about kind of about the stuff I was talking about earlier with the seasons. If they think they can still afford to run seasons in there or some seasonal hate at least, so they can do their things.
Word.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if there are any other Greyjoy archetypes that we missed out on.
I mean, you know, folks have been trying to push or hoping to push this this character light thing. We finally got those warships that turn into dudes. Well, is that a thing?
That's a joke.
Man, I've been really hoping. Don't tell Clue it's a joke.
I'll tell him to his face.
Guy's been dreaming for years here.
It's just not going
to
happen.
I mean, I would love to see it be a thing, too, but, you know. I'd also love to have Kirsten Dunst blow me every night. That's not going to happen.
Wow, Kirsten Dunst, good choice.
You're welcome.
I really enjoyed Stardust.
Sure. Whatever movie that is.
What did I miss? Folks do what?
Daryl wants Kirsten Dunst to blow him every night.
Oh. I mean, who doesn't?
Same.
Right. So, Chris, you said you tried to write up a list then of some underplayed Greyjoy cards, but didn't really have much success.
Yeah, I've got a couple that might fit in the category, but none that are going to be as obvious, because even in non-season decks, you see so many of the same cards. Like River Blockade gets played in decks that aren't really choke decks, just because it's a good card to have around. Oh, yeah. Like, it messes up your opponent's plans. So it's tough to find, but a couple that I would mention, one I would say is Fishing Net. I think that card is pretty well positioned right now, and could be something that people should look at for Worlds.
Mm-hmm.
It just gives a great element of control to a house that's already controlling other aspects of a game. The only downside is, in a winter deck, it might be too expensive.
Yeah, two costs is a pretty good hurdle for that card, in my opinion.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
It can suck, but I do like that it just exiles that character, and it's a weapon.
the
pseudo magic turn.
Yes.
Yeah, it pretty much is. Yeah. You know,
it definitely is. Another one that I like a lot that goes in most of my Greyjoy decks is Fish Whiskers.
A lot of people are like Fish Whiskers.
Kind of mediocre about him, but honestly, I won one game. And then there was another game where his ability was relevant, that if he's kneeling, you can always, to be a Kraken off.
Oh, yeah.
And that is actually very useful. Like, I had a turn in the top 16 against, I think it was a Targ player, where I had to cancel two effects on the same turn, and I didn't have any way to kneel my guys because they were both pre-challenge effects. They were both, I think they were either burn events or something like that. Something he did before he declared any challenges, so there was no way for me to get my guys now, but I had Fish Whiskers out, and I was able to get them both, and it just crippled it.
Yeah, stand Fish Whiskers, who kneel him again to do what he got there to be a Kraken. Absolutely.
Yep.
Pro play.
I remember first seeing that out of Casey a couple of years
back. Yes, I actually, I was talking to Mr. Bruno about what I would say, and I think he mentioned that, or maybe it was James. Somebody down here had mentioned that Casey did that to great success a few years back as well. So clearly, I was not considering that I had an original trick, but it's still one that's important to.
Yeah,
a trick. It's still a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Aside from that, yes, you could Iron Fleet Captain, which one that's a sort of a pet card of mine. It's obviously in an unopposed deck it goes in, but even sometimes if you just need another good character that can grab some power, I like to have him around.
Yeah, he's fairly solid, but the stealth's good, and they not quite renowned.
Yeah, unopposed renowned.
On the non-unique body is pretty solid.
He's fine. I wouldn't play him in much.
Yeah,
I like him well enough, and he's got relevant traits for sure, in Greyjoy.
He's a corner case, but like I said, I was kind of scraping the barrel in terms of underutilized cards, because outside of the top, 15 to 20 Greyjoy cards, every Greyjoy card is an underutilized card.
That's sadly true.
Well, out of those underutilized cards, do my erstwhile co-hosts have any pet cards that they want to throw into that discussion?
Not really, no, honestly. Chris isn't wrong. Most Greyjoy decks still have a pretty similar outline that you just fill in with numbers.
I do have a fun one that I came across the other week, and this is not something that's anywhere near competitive, but we had a player come back who played in the CCG days, and he just recently rejoined the game, and he's putting together decks, and it's always fun to see some perspective from somebody who isn't, one of the normal, not even necessarily a top player, but somebody who's up on the current meta and expects the same things that we all expect about the meta. So he just has no preconceived notions about things. He had built a Greyjoy deck that played the Wharf Rats. I don't know if you guys remember the Wharf Rats.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes, I do.
But his intent was, it's interesting to note that, I guess I'll read the text or recite the text for people who don't want to go look it up. So it's a Shadows card. It's Shadows 1. They are, I don't know if they have stealth, but I know they are 2-strength military that cannot be killed, which is interesting. And they say response when they come out of shadows. Oh, and sorry, the other part of their passive text is, when the character who controls this wins the challenge, they have to mill a card. So they have to discard a card from the top of their deck.
Yeah.
And their response is when they come out of shadows, you give it to your opponent. So they have this card that they can't get rid of because it can't be killed, that's milling them. But what this player did that came back was he found the Balon Greyjoy that triggers off a Shadows Crest that says whenever a card is milled, if it's a Shadows card, you can put it into Shadows regardless of whose card it is. So he was not triggering the Wharf Rat's response, so they were staying in play for him, and he had a can't-be-killed character milling himself to get Shadows cards in that he would then put into Shadows immediately with Balon without paying the cost.
Oh, nice.
It's a sweet play.
I thought that was a pretty hilarious combo.
That's nice.
Seems pretty average.
I like Longship Red Jester. That's a cool
card. I like that one as well. Especially, I actually had that in the decks, like we were talking about Will's sort of hard choke deck. I had those and First Mates in there to recycle them, and that was just another aspect of location choke that was, when it got going, it was pretty good, although it was a little clunky. Nice.
And isn't there another one? I want to say there was another warship that did something similar that Lanny can use as well, something Drummond, right? Like after someone plays a location, they pay 2 gold or put it on the bottom, or I can't remember how it worked.
It's ditch 2 power off their house. And it was one of those cards that got eroded when they fixed all the stuff that was the choose. So they fixed that and Sorrowful Man. No, they didn't fix
it. Oh, they didn't fix it? Oh, they didn't Sorrowful Man. Yeah, you're right. You're totally right.
Yeah, it was that and Sorrowful Man. So now you, essentially, if they don't have 2 power in their house, you have that out, and they can, when they play location, you can send it to the bottom of their deck. They do have 2 power, they just ditch the power. So it's not a great mid to late game card, but it can be interesting to flop it, and then if you have one later, you probably won't spend a gold on it. But
no,
Yeah. You know, while we're on the warship kick, I still am not certain it really gets the respect that I feel it deserves, but Captured Cog
has
a really special place in my heart.
Most broken card in the game, so good.
I love Captured Cog.
I do like it, too.
Yeah, I always try and find room to squeeze it in, especially, you know, then you put the device in and you've got some. I do try and squeeze it in, Joe. but then you put some Bays of Ice in, so you got some draw going. It's a cool engine, and that's something when I was talking about the unopposed deck, like that was sort of the deck I had in mind, was those cards and then the Naval Escort to kneel them all, mm-hmm. because they still give you the bonuses. They don't care if they're standing or kneeling.
Yeah.
So then you have just a bunch of pumps on the board, and your intimidate guys get through for easy power.
Not to mention,
and the initiative boost is actually pretty relevant for an unopposed deck.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, and they also work with the Naval Escort really well. So,
mm-hmm.
Yes, that was what I was saying.
Is that what you say? I'm sorry, I must have zoned out. My bad.
That's all good.
You just tunes Chris right out.
My apologies.
Yeah, you know, as far as the rest of Greyjoy stuff goes, Chris is actually really right. A lot of their house just doesn't seem to have the same kind of, like, upper-level depth that other houses have, you know?
It's just how many copies of whatever cards are you playing.
Yeah, it's kind of a letdown. Some of the newer stuff's kind of neat. I know Joe schooled me with a Storm the Gate that I walked into the other day, but now that I'm actually thinking about why he schooled me with it is because he was playing Baratheon. For some reason, I had kind of forgotten that it's House Baratheon or Greyjoy only. But it sure is a nice option for Greyjoy as well.
Yeah, I could definitely see that coming into play in a Greyjoy deck. If you have Asha as your, you know, not kneeling character and she's the only one up, then you get rid of everybody else. That could be pretty sweet.
Yeah, or some Sport of Harlaw. See, that unopposed deck has some more options.
There we go. The knight gets up.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I forgot he existed. Oh,
that's one to put on an underutilized list. I think the knight is really good.
Yeah, he's fine.
He's pretty all right. I'm going to double check. He stands when you win an unopposed and discards a card, right?
I think he's 4 cost.
Being 4 is frustrating. But he does have Joust.
Yeah,
Joust is dope shit.
Especially with Naval. Like, the combination of Joust and Naval is just insane.
Yeah, kind of makes you wish for more Joust and Greyjoy.
Yeah.
With all their knights.
Yeah, they do have a lot of knights. Tons of knights.
The old Greyjoy Knights of the Realm deck.
Oh, shit.
I could have sworn in the CCG days I actually remember that happening before. Not because they had many knights. It was something funky.
That'd be interesting to find out.
Yeah. Well, any other thoughts, parting thoughts, or other topics on the Greyjoy front?
I would be curious where you guys put them in the house ranking. I know that's something you've been doing with the other houses. Where do you guys think Greyjoy is in terms of a six?
Bridge was pretty high up there, honestly.
Yeah.
Maybe in the top three, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely
three.
I think that's pretty cemented,
I would definitely agree.
I think they have a strong argument to be the number one house sometimes. At least when you're on the receiving end of one of those uber cancel decks, you're just like, I can't do a damn thing. I can't kill their guys. Mm-hmm. They've got all these saves. Like, you know, in the right hands, a Greyjoy deck it can take it to the top easily.
Definitely.
Yeah, we'd kind of been given some of the other houses letter grades. I think I would give Greyjoy a solid, I was about to say solid A, but now that I think about it, I think I maybe will downgrade it to an A-. They have a lot of really strong cards, but I think that lack of depth does hurt a little bit because there's not much in the way of surprises.
And that's the interesting thing is going to see how that shapes the metagame at Worlds because, you know, I made the point that Greyjoy Winter is a great deck, but that's not a spoiler alert. Everybody and their mother knows that that's coming.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And no mm-hmm. top player is going to walk into Worlds with a deck and sit down across from a Greyjoy Song of Ice and go, oh, crap, I forgot about that.
Didn't plan for it.
Yeah. Too bad I forgot to put Carrion Birds in my deck. And on a, you know, related but unrelated note, yeah, 3x Carrion Birds back to an auto include for sure. Yeah,
I agree.
Props and slops.
Anybody with a prop or a slop prop. This week?
I got a prop. Let's hear it. My prop is to the Android operating system. Recently, my iPhone 4 died. I could no longer hear people out of the earpiece. And due to a special employee plan I have, I cannot upgrade to an iPhone even if I wanted to.
Whoa, what's that?
It's probably because nobody actually makes money off of iPhones except for Apple, is what I'm assuming.
Sucks.
Which is fine. So I recently procured a LG G Pro, which is, if you're familiar with it, is a borderline massive phone.
Is it a phablet?
Oh, is it a phablet?
Yeah, it is technically.
I fucking hate the word phablet.
It is a phablet, and it is fabulous.
For comparison's sake, real quick, Zeller, would you say you hate the word phablet or the word meese more?
Oh, absolutely phablet. I love the word meese.
Okay.
Yeah, I've never called it a phablet until today, so thank you for reminding me that it is indeed one of those phones. But, yes, it is a large phone, but I thoroughly enjoy it. It's a lot faster than what I had. It's got a full 1080p display.
Nice.
Yeah, it's really awesome, and it was only $100 to upgrade to it. And that is not just because of my employee plan. That's actually the standard upgrade price for anybody, so... If you're in the market for a cheap upgrade and a tight-ass phone, you should get the LG G Pro. So I'm super happy with it. It looks awesome. It's super fast. And I did not know how I was going to handle the change from having an iPhone to an Android. And it's freaking sweet.
As an Apple fanboy, I'll stay quiet on this one.
I mean,
yeah, dude, I'm with you, Chris.
Whoa, guys. Whoa.
Ooh. Sounds like there's a division.
I definitely did my homework, but you know, I had to do that. That's another discussion for another day. We should definitely talk about it at Worlds, though.
Man,
definitely.
All right, I have a prop, and it's to Pokemon X and Y.
Oh my god, yes,
dude, it rules.
Dude, it's so good. Did I tell you I got that?
You got it, dude, Daryl.
Dude, I got it,
dude. We need to play.
Yeah, I mean, me and Robin went half seas on it, so. It's excellent.
I've never played a single Pokemon game of any letter or color.
Dude, you're missing out. Like they're good.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's not true. I played Pokemon Snap, the Pokemon photo game.
The Pokemon game where you don't actually do anything.
Hey, Pokemon Snap rules. Right. I love that game.
I played that for about 10 minutes.
That was the first video game I ever bought with my own money.
Wow.
Nice.
I love Pokemon Snap. And I love Pokemon X and Y also. Specifically Y, because that's the one I got.
Daryl, I got Y as well. Pokemon X. No. My buddy got X, though, so we're covered.
Okay.
He's going to trade us that special Charizard.
Thank God.
It's blue. God, we are grown men that play Pokemon games. What the fuck is wrong with us?
There is nothing wrong with that, Daryl.
No, dude, like, seriously, it's weird because, you know, I'm 25 years old. And, like, I'll have a night where, like, I played it, which, you know, recently, like, the other night. And, like, I come to work and I want to talk about it. You can't talk to your supervisors and shit that you've been playing Pokemon and expect to, you know, move up in a company. Oh, dude, yeah, man, I was playing the other night and, man, I fucked this Diglett in the ass. My Butterfree, homie, you know?
That's why you need friends like us, Daryl.
You know, it's just one of those things. It sticks with you. You know, I've been playing Pokemon since I was, you know, in like the fourth grade, if not earlier. You know, it's really awesome to still get enjoyment out of that game.
I mean, we're four grown men discussing a card game, so I don't think there's, you know, Pokemon's not that much further along. You know, it's really,
I have no problem with who I am or who you guys are. So, you know, talk about Pokemon to the world, Daryl.
Yeah. Of course, you know, a little bit of a disclaimer here. Knowing what Chris's job is, he's probably actually rewarded for having these discussions with his bosses.
That's legitimately true. I am. For those who don't know, I work for Comic-Con International, the company that puts on San Diego Comic-Con, which is the biggest Comic-Con in the country, and the one that does not tweet from its users' accounts without authorization.
Ooh, did something go down that I didn't hear about?
Yeah, New York City Comic-Con?
You didn't hear about that?
Yeah, I guess I missed
Huge
that.
Huge deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a pretty big deal. They have RFID chips in their badges at New York Comic Con, and apparently they offered to let people link up their social media and then use that link up to tweet from people's accounts saying, "Hey, I'm having a great time at Comic Con" and stuff like that.
That rules.
Wow. Even if someone wasn't having a great time.
Yeah.
We were speculating around our office how many people lost their jobs because New York Comic Con tweeted that they were at Comic Con when they were sick.
Wow. Why haven't you introduced us to Joss Whedon yet?
I wish. I actually did have a discussion with Joss Whedon's agent over the phone last year.
Ooh,
but that's the closest I've ever been.
Nice. Well, it looks like we've gotten in here.
Yeah, we do.
Nice. I would like to.
Oh, go ahead, Daryl.
I was just gonna say I'd like to salivate on the same pillow as Joss Whedon. So nice for you to talk to his agent.
if his agent calls back, I will note that that you would like to salivate on the same pillow that he has salivated on.
All right, nice.
Not really sure where you're going with that, but I'll make sure the request gets made.
All right, what's your prop, homie?
I don't know if any of you guys, have you guys gotten into any of the digital card games that are coming out?
If you're talking about SoulForge.
Yeah. Talking about the SoulForge.
Played a little SoulForge.
I am loving SoulForge. You're in on SoulForge too, Brett?
I love the fuck out of some SoulForge.
Yep, me too. And Tiny Grimes is actually even streaming the game. So if you want to check it out, then
post that on Facebook.
Yeah, it's a blast. It really is. It's a little less complicated than, say, Thrones, but it's definitely fast-paced and gets you thinking. And soon it's coming to the phone, so I guess I'll never get work done again after that happens.
Yeah, once it becomes that'll
be a good day.
It's a fun game. It's a fun game. There's also a World of Warcraft Hearthstone game, and there's a couple others I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, I've been wanting to try out Hearthstone, but I think it's still tough to get the beta.
Yeah.
A friend of mine sold the beta key yesterday for $150, so yes, it's still tough to get it.
Yeah, I'm not listening.
Why would you buy a beta key to a game that will be free to play when it comes out is beyond me, but I guess that's how people spend their money.
People are crazy.
All right, guys. Well, thank you for having me on. It's been fun.
Dude, thanks for coming on.
Are we kicking him off without without wrapping props and slops?
Whoa, sorry. Did you have a proper wrap-up?
Yeah, carry on. I thought we were wrapping up here.
We just have a lot of awkward silence in this.
Yeah, we do.
It's so much more difficult to combat those over Skype than when we were in person and you could see when someone was, you know, about to say something. And
that is really unprofessional.
I was expecting, you know, a plane ticket in the mail, but that just never happened.
Yeah.
He
sent it, but it was only one way out to Hawaii. Yeah. We didn't send you one to get back. No, I was going to throw out a musical prop and steal Daryl's usual thunder here. Because I heard Lords Royals.
Mm-hmm.
And decided I really like that song. Oh, when I was listening to the rest of the album this week. What's that?
I said that song is fantastic.
It's really good. I love something about like that kind of downbeat like energy in that song, and the rest of the album seems to be pretty similar. So I'm digging it.
I like it too.
I'd say go look her up. Also, I'm disturbed because I was looking at her Wikipedia page and realized she's 16.
I did not know.
I did not know that either. Like, no one at 16 should be allowed to be that much more famous than me.
Yeah, that always gets me. You know, when I was a kid, you know, I grew up watching a lot of sports, and you see sports stars and stuff, and you're like, oh, yeah, like, they somebody to aspire to. And now I'm getting to the age where, like, sports stars are younger than I am, and I'm like, what the? Like, if I was a running back in the NFL, my career would already be over. that kind of bugs me.
Yeah. So, I do have a quick slop, and it's my last one I have for the evening. But it's to the game Watch Dogs being delayed until spring of 2014.
Wow.
And also to the end of my launch day PlayStation 4. Because that was literally the only reason I was wanting to get a PlayStation 4 at launch.
I did not realize they delayed it that much.
That announced today.
That's ridiculous.
The game looked good.
That's ridiculous that they did that.
Yeah. So I'll hold off and I'll pick up my PS4 when Watch Dogs comes out next year.
You know, to offset that, I do have a gaming prop, though. I played through the first episode of the Telltale Fables game, The Wolf Among Us.
Oh, nice.
And it was quite fun.
I haven't gotten around to that yet.
It was definitely worth my $5. It doesn't feel quite as, like, I don't know, encapsulated as the Walking Dead episodes felt. Like, you felt like you got a pretty good, like, self-contained game each time you played through an episode on Walking Dead. This one, I think, because there's an overarching, like, murder mystery that you're investigating, it doesn't give quite that same sort of resolution, but it does leave you on a pretty nice cliffhanger.
Yeah. And it does, I mean, that's a different kind of storytelling, so.
Yes, yeah. But it was still real good, so I highly recommend it, and I'm eagerly awaiting the next episode.
I have a download, I just haven't gotten around to watching.
You mean playing?
Or playing. Shut up, Daryl.
I mean, it's a Telltale game. Most of it is watching. Yeah. It's good. Also, I had Kristen play through it while she was over here this weekend, and she really dug it. And I learned she makes a much more violent Bigby Wolf than I do. I'm kind of scared.
All right. Anyone else? Props or slops?
I'm good now.
I just want to make sure that we're ending this episode on the right note, because when I was listening at work today to your Stark episode, I did not hear a proper two-word sign-off that I'm used to, and I was very sad.
Whoa.
Well, you can blame Will for that one, because I said it.
Really? I bet I probably accidentally snipped it off or covered it up with the outro music, so I apologize.
All right, I just want to make sure my episode doesn't have similar...
You know what? That's a good point, Chris. Why don't you go ahead and do us the honors?
Yes.
I will preface this by saying I've watched one episode of Archer, and Tiny Grimes is very disappointed in me.
I'm also disappointed in you.
As he should be.
I did watch an episode where they said, "Danger Zone! Turn around, there's nothing to see."